For this year's Schools Day, we were asked to talk on a topic of popularism in history. And I chose as my topic New Zealand's first populist government, the Liberal government, which served from 1891 to 1912. And I will address today how they saw themselves as a populist government. Before 1890, New Zealand was governed by a small elite, cliques of large landowners who grouped according to local issues such as roads and bridges. The long economic depression and unemployment of the 1880s and the universal manhood suffrage with the abolition of plural voting that was introduced in 1889 changed all that. The 1880s also saw the growth of unionism in New Zealand, and the defeat of the maritime strike in 1890 led the unions and the unionists to turn to politics, specifically the Liberal Party. The Liberal Party supported the strikers. They claimed to be, I quote, the champions of the people against the champions of privilege. In other words, the very first populist political party in New Zealand. And here is just a sideline you might have heard in a recent American election campaign, a leader claiming that he was going to be draining the swamp, or cleaning up the corruption of interest groups who bought access with money. Well, this was probably what the Liberals were doing, and that's where the analogy to Donald Trump ends. The Liberal Party was elected to office in 1891. In terms of a populist political party, though, possibly a greater turning point than 1891 came in 1893, when the then Premier John Balance died and Richard John Seddon took over. The coronation of King Dick, as he became known, in 1893 marked an important turning point in New Zealand's political history. What was decisive about it was that it was the first time someone who seemed very much like the average voter was leading the country. He was a former pub owner from the west coast of the South Island, originating from Lancashire, England. As Premier, Seddon toured the country, but what he said on his tours was less important in gaining votes than his own imposing and stimulating presence. His remarkable memory for names and faces and details of personal circumstances helped too. The Premier, Richard John Seddon, or King Dick as I said he was affectionately known, was extremely popular. A big man, 127 kilos at his death in 1906, aged 61, he had a reputation for bluntness. It was said of him that, I quote, when argument failed, he suffered from a barely resistible impulse to punch his adversary in the jaw. Seddon was proud of his government's achievements in what he called God's own country. He was a truly populist political leader. Despite concerns among some sectors of society, the popularism which the Liberals espoused was not based on socialism. In fact, one Member of Parliament, William Pember Reeves, was the closest they came to socialism. He was a self-proclaimed Fabian socialist, but Seddon packed him off to London as Agent General, probably to get rid of him from his own Parliament. The party in general did not favour, as was sometimes claimed, the working classes to the exclusion of other classes. Rather, liberal populism consisted of a vision of a particular kind of society they wished to promote with very particular features. Firstly, it was a rural society that they wanted. Secondly, a society in which those who worked hard, were sober and thrifty, would get on. Thirdly, a family-based society in which women and children were protected and family life promoted. Fourthly, a white society protected from undue immigration from other races. And finally, fifthly, a society in which Māori were protected from the evils of a modern world and assisted to become good citizens. Historian David Hamer has written that the basic emotional impetus of liberal politics in New Zealand appeared to be the desire to stamp out old world evils, in other words, evils relating to Britain, whenever they gave signs of emerging in the New World. This was premised on a Golden Age notion of what England had been like before industrialisation and urbanisation. Evils of the Old World, such as slums, disease, crime and destitution, would be avoided in the New World. Indeed, there would be no poverty and therefore no need for welfare or relief systems. They strove to make New Zealand a place where, quote, getting on in life, unquote, was the result not of inherited privilege of the class into which they were born, but of the possession and exercise of certain moral qualities, such as industriousness and frugality. New Zealand was to be free of those rigid class divisions, which in the Old World prevented people from improving their condition of life, no matter how talented or hardworking they might be. This accounts for the Liberals' dislike of the large landowners, in particular the pastoralists of Canterbury, and their focus on land reform. Land reform was crucial to the Liberals. They aimed to break up these large estates and to promote the small family dairy farm, not necessarily as an economic benefit to the country, but as a basis of a new moral society. In this goal, they were, of course, assisted by the introduction of refrigerated shipping in 1882, improved communication networks, and, I have to say, the ongoing alienation of Māori lands for this purpose. But it was really their Advances to Settlers Act, as it was called, which contributed most to this trend. They provided finance to set up small family farms. They hoped that if people gained access to the land, settlers this is, they would be self-sufficient and would move out of the growing towns. Those who didn't move out of the towns were also within the Liberal sights. The Liberals aimed to create a contented, self-reliant and efficient workforce through their labour legislation. They did not promote the interests of the workers at the expense of employers, although this is how some employers saw it at the time. Now, labour legislation was largely the responsibility of William Pember Reeves, who introduced no less than 14 laws regulating working hours, wages, factory conditions, preventing the exploitation of female and child labour. His labour laws culminated in a comprehensive Factories Act of 1894, which provided for the registration and inspection of factories through a new labour department set up in 1892, and in particular closely regulated the employment of women and children, which really reflected this paternalistic form of popularism I referred to earlier. They were, of course, also responsible for granting women the vote in 1893, were quite famous for that, and this again was part of their effort really to promote and support a moral society. This is a different topic which we could have talked about as well. To what extent was Reeves's famous Industrial Conciliation and Arbitration Act of 1894 a form of popularism? It certainly constructed a system to avoid the necessity of strike action in the industrial workforce by setting up a system of negotiation and famously prevented any strikes for the next decade. But it did not necessarily favour the working classes, as it was sometimes branded, and this was to become clear later. The goal was peaceful solutions and hence a peaceful workforce and industrial efficiency. The Liberal social policies also reflected the kind of society they were trying to promote. The Old Age Pensions Act of 1898 was famously said to lay the foundations of the welfare state in New Zealand, and it was the first state-funded pension to be introduced. While modest, it was a contribution to the living standards of those over the age of 65 who qualified. And yet, we learn more about this legislation by who was excluded than by who qualified. In order to qualify, you had to prove yourself in an open court to be a moral, upstanding citizen with an income below a certain amount and to have lived in the country for no less than 25 years. You had to be clear of a criminal record, 25 years for a serious crime and 12 years for minor offences, and men must not have deserted their wives. If a pensioner was convicted of drunkenness or any other offence, the convicting court had the power to take away one or more instalments or cancel the pension outright. So there were certain moral requirements, which tells us again about the kind of society the Liberals wished to promote. Certain nationalities were also excluded. So-called aliens, as they called them, Chinese and other Asians, whether naturalised or not, which tells us something about the Liberal attitudes, along with their immigration acts attempting to exclude these groups, of course. Māori were included in old age pensions, but were treated separately, with magistrates given the power to grant the pension in the form of food and clothing through the native minister, again showing a certain paternalism, in this case towards Māori. A second pension was introduced in 1911, the widow's pension. This was for widows with children, with similar restrictions as the old age pension. Women of so-called bad character were excluded, as were solo mothers through divorce or desertion, women with illegitimate or adopted children, and all so-called aliens and Asians. Now, the Liberals passed a vast amount of other social legislation, such as housing, health, and infant welfare, and this was all in their attempt to create a contented, family-based, moral society. So New Zealand's first populist government aimed to create a new world, devoid of the evils of the old world with its slums, disease, crime and prostitution. The Liberals aimed to make New Zealand a land of small holders. The family farm was encouraged and promoted as a moral as well as an economic force. Within the towns, workers were to be protected to create a stable, contented society devoid of strikes. They did not aim for a classless society in any form of socialism, but rather one in which social and occupational mobility was possible based on virtues of intelligence, frugality, and hard work. Their form of popularism, therefore, I would argue, was a moral one. Welfare was to also be based on moral qualifications of the so-called deserving and the undeserving poor. In other words, oriented towards the deserving poor rather than relieving poverty as such. And this particular brand of popularism was given effect by a whole raft of legislation, which stayed with New Zealand for many years. For instance, the moral clause for welfare legislation stating that applicants had to be of reputable character was in place until 1972. As for the consequences of the Liberals' particular brand of popularism, they did not succeed in creating a moralistic, rural-based society. If that meant free of the evils of industrialised cities of the old world, because urbanisation, with all its incumbent problems, continued apace into the 20th century.